Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
President Biden calls for a steep hike in tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum. Plus, we'll look at how Biden's efforts to shore up support among progressives could be coming at the expense of the support of more critical voters.
Where Biden is losing this election is with independents. It's with those voters in the center. It's with those traditional swing voters that tend to decide American elections.
And the DOJ dangles the promise of immunity to executives who blow the whistle on corporate misconduct. It's Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. President Biden is calling for a more than tripling of key tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum products from 7.5% to 25%. Further details are expected when Biden visits swing state Pennsylvania today. If implemented, the moves would mark a doubling down on protectionism in an election year in which trade is a flashpoint, not least because a separate 25% steel tariff and 10% duty on aluminum put in place by former President Donald Trump remain in effect. Journal reporter Jason Douglas says American imports of Chinese steel have fallen since those Trump-era measures, but that a recent rapid rise in Chinese exports could explain why Biden sees the need for further action.
This is largely a consequence of the property bubble bursting in China, and so China is just swimming in steel and is having to ship it all over the world. And we've seen pretty sharp increases in Chinese steel exports to a bunch of other countries, such as Mexico, Vietnam, India, Turkey, Indonesia. All these places have been buying a lot of Chinese steel. One of the concerns of the Biden administration, and perhaps another reason why they are raising tariffs, is that Chinese steel may be entering the U.S. through third countries. So one of the things that we understand that the administration will be doing will be pressing the Mexican authorities to make sure that Chinese steel isn't arriving in the U.S. tariff-free through the free trade agreement with the U.S. and Canada.
Separately, the Biden administration is continuing to study raising tariffs on a range of other Chinese exports to the U.S., including EVs, batteries, and solar products. Australia is planning to boost defense spending as competition between the U.S. and China heats up in the Indo-Pacific. On top of a roughly $32 billion boost in defense spending over the next decade, the key U.S. ally also plans to overhaul its military forces by developing a larger and more lethal navy, a better air force, and more cyber and space capabilities. Speaking today, Australian Defense Minister Richard Marles said that while an invasion of Australia was unlikely, its new defense strategy accounts for risks beyond its shores.
Our national security actually lies in the heart of our region, because the defense of Australia does not mean much without the collective security of the region in which we live.
Australia has in recent years deepened its defense cooperation with the U.S. as Washington seeks to boost its network of alliances in the region to deter China. Meanwhile, with an election just over a year away, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is hoping that new capital gains taxes on corporations and wealthy individuals will give his government a boost in public opinion polls. The details were unveiled in the government's latest federal budget on Tuesday and mark one of the biggest tax increases in recent Canadian policymaking. The Journal's Paul Vieira in Ottawa says the Liberal government there is aiming to raise around 20 billion Canadian dollars over the next half decade.
Canada's finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, contends the increase will only affect a fraction of the population, like a tenth of the top 1% of income earners, and the tax revenue will help lift the prospects for younger Canadians who find themselves in financial straits and are losing hope about owning a home. Yet business groups and economists alike warn this could further dampen business investment, which policymakers at the Bank of Canada say needs to ramp up if Canada has any hope of ending an extended slump in productivity.
Let's shift now to look at the ramifications that the Israel-Hamas war is having on the U.S. race for president. It is an issue that's been creating headaches for President Biden for months now, as he balances offering vocal support for Israel's security with calls for the country to exercise military restraint. And Journal senior political correspondent Molly Ball writes, it is just one of a growing list of issues on which Biden has been signaling his concern over support by voters on the political left, potentially at the expense of voters he desperately needs in the political center. Molly, break down for us the premise of your latest reporting, which sort of seems to argue that one group's concerns are more important than the concerns of another ahead of November.
That's right. This article is really aimed at trying to understand why is it that President Biden is losing this election, according to most polls. It's easy to look at something like these massive protests that we've seen over Gaza and say, oh, it's because he's losing the left. But if you dig into the data, that's actually not the case. And in fact, what you find is that Biden and Trump are drawing about the same proportion of their respective party bases. But where Biden is losing this election is with independents. It's with those voters in the center. It's with those traditional swing voters that tend to decide American elections. And many analysts I spoke to, particularly centrists, said is that because Biden has spent so much time, in their view, pandering to the left on various policy issues, he may be losing that center.
On various policy issues, Molly, let's pick one. The war in Gaza. The president has been facing mounting pressure to call for a ceasefire there and to push Israel to limit civilian casualties. How is Biden positioning himself on that in a way that might have a bearing come November?
Well, we've seen these protests from progressives and pro-Palestinian protesters calling on Biden to sever the historic American relationship with Israel, to put conditions on aid to Israel, to halt arms sales to Israel. And it's possible that it could be hurting him in the other direction. You know, Republicans and some pro-Israel Democrats have accused Biden of making foreign policy with those protesters in mind, and they worry that he could be losing the support of moderate voters and of Jewish voters on the other side of the coalition. Obviously, American public opinion has turned against this conflict, but it is still the case that the vast majority of American voters take Israel's side in this war and want America to continue to be an ally of the Jewish state.
All right, from one hot button issue to the next, you say this pattern is also playing out when it comes to immigration.
We do know that where Biden is vulnerable in the electorate is largely with voters who are younger and voters of color. But I think it is a misreading to say that those voters are progressives. And in fact, voters of color tend to be the most moderate part of the Democratic coalition. And so a lot of these centrist analysts would say the way to win those voters is not to make liberal appeals, is not to take left-wing stands on issues like immigration. And according to our polling and many others, voters largely want to see the president get tough on the border, but he's been reluctant to do that. And we've seen progressives warning him not to do that. And he appears to be heeding those calls. There's been a lot of talk from the administration that the president might try to do some kind of executive action after the attempt to forge a bipartisan deal on asylum policy in the Senate fell apart. But the White House hasn't done that. And our reporting is that part of the reason is because they fear that blowback from the progressive base.
All right. So possibly some action from Biden on immigration there. Is that a signal maybe that the president, his team are starting to become aware of the kind of vulnerability you're discussing here and might change course?
When I spoke to the Biden campaign, they really disputed the idea that the president has pandered too much to the left. They point to the fact that he continues to draw protests from the left to say he's not on the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren end of the party, even on something like student loans. There are some centrists I spoke to who believe that this is a matter of timing, that right now we're still pretty early in the campaign. This is a phase when the president needs to be shoring up his base, and they hope that he will pivot to the center as the general election continues to engage. So it remains to be seen if this is a momentary phenomenon or an overall misreading of the electorate by the Biden campaign.
I've been speaking to Wall Street Journal senior political correspondent Molly Ball. Molly, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, the jury begins to take shape in the first ever trial to decide criminal charges against a former president. And more bad news for Tesla. Those stories and more after the break.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The jury for Donald Trump's hush money case is finally taking shape after the judge dismissed dozens of New Yorkers who said they couldn't be fair and impartial. But yesterday afternoon, three women and four men were chosen for a jury that will be the first ever to decide criminal charges against a former president. The jurors include a charter school teacher, a software engineer, a salesman, a corporate lawyer, and an oncology nurse. The pace of jury selection means we could see trial testimony begin next week. Trump has denied any wrongdoing and, speaking yesterday, repeated claims that he's being targeted for political reasons.
It's a rigged trial. Our courts, everything is screwed up in New York, and the whole world is watching.
Another 100 potential jurors are expected to be grilled by the judge, prosecutors, and Trump's attorneys on Thursday. The Justice Department has announced details of a new pilot program that would grant immunity to executives who share information about corporate misconduct they themselves were involved in. The policy is designed to put pressure on companies to disclose misconduct before their own executives do, including around financial and healthcare fraud, money laundering, and corporate bribery. To be eligible, executives must voluntarily provide original information, cooperate with prosecutors, and agree to give up any profits they may have received from the reported misconduct. And Tesla has delayed deliveries of its Cybertruck in recent days, with buyers saying the automaker pushed back the scheduled delivery date for the stainless steel pickup truck without giving a reason. It couldn't be determined how many buyers were affected, and Tesla didn't immediately return a request for comment. But the news has added pressure to Tesla's stock, which dropped to its lowest level in nearly a year yesterday, a day after the company said it planned to lay off more than 10% of its global workforce. And that is what's news for Wednesday morning. Additional sound in this episode was from Reuters. Today's show was produced by Daniel Bach and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producers were Christina Rocha and Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And as always, thanks for listening.